Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And before we get into the hoops talk, got a little bit of an announcement about the pod. We now have merch. We got hoodies and t-shirts and coffee mugs and tumblers and totes and stickers and all of that over at Cotton Bureau. Check us out. Give a search there for Laker Film Room podcast over there. Got all sorts of cool stuff with the cover art logo that you guys see for this, along with the in the refrigerator ones on a couple of different items. So if you're interested in that, it helps us out a lot. It helps Jack out, the great Pure Hoop who did the design on all of that. We're super excited about this. So just want to let you guys know about that. We'll send out links and all that. But yeah, Cotton Bureau, check it out. Very excited about all that. D, today wanted to start out talking about the news that Andrew Friedman and Farhan Zaidi, both of the LA Dodgers, are working with the Lakers organization. What they're doing, we do not quite know yet. But I wanted to speculate a little bit with you just about that, sort of a reimagining of the Lakers front office. This is an opportunity to think big picture in a way that the Lakers haven't had a chance to in years and years. There aren't really restructurings of this size in circumstances where you don't change the owners or really let a lot of people go. And so I think that Friedman and Zaidi are here to sort of evaluate the needs of the organization, not from they got to sign this player or trade for that guy or anything like that, but just sort of the structural components of it. I was talking to somebody the other day who was like, the Dodgers have a ton of individual coaches, swing coaches, pitching coaches. A lot of the analytics are very tailored to specific players and things like that, that I think are an avenue for what it could look like. But just wanted to get your reaction to that, D, of the news of Friedman and Zaidi joining the Lakers.
Whenever there's an ownership change or a big like front office shakeup, even that has nothing to do with an ownership change, just like hiring a new general manager or president of basketball operations or anything like that, there's always an opportunity at that point to see what structures are in place, what works and what doesn't, and to likely bring in new people and replace old people and supplement people and see what's needed. We've talked about this a bunch within the context of the Walter purchase of the team, but the prospect of doing an overall analysis of what direction and what's needed within the organization in order to, if not take it to the next level, to make sure that your goal of being a winning organization is sustainable, that you're doing everything you can And what better way to do that than to bring in people who have contributed to doing that in another organization, sports organization, especially that you've owned? It's not going to be a one-to-one. Basketball is a different sport than baseball. There are different rules in place that govern all kinds of things, even the analytics stuff that you were talking about, the way that you can build out an analytics program around like what's going to work in baseball, which is way more of like a one-on-one sport masquerading as a team sport.
Sure. Yeah. It's a series of one-on-one matchups where you stop after every play and then you go up against the next guy type of thing. Yeah.
And also the very segregated nature of one act. I'm throwing this one pitch to this one player right now. We're going to reset. We're going to do the exact same thing again. That's just much different than a flow sport like the NBA. I can tell a player as much as I want that when you dribble three times to your left and you pull up and you take a jump, sure, that might be meaningful in some way, shape, or form, but is that going to be as meaningful against defender X, who is not an all-NBA defensive level player, versus defender Y, who is? There's just differences in how you can apply some of this stuff, but I think the overall idea of what works in terms of building out an organization, which ways and what these differences are between the leagues and the sports and everything else, and apply the same sort of critical thinking towards what's the best way to build this out, I think is the best place to start. And if I had to speculate, I would imagine this is sort of what the ground floor looks like, right? And the how related this is or not to Jesse and Joey being let go, I'm sure they're at the very least tangentially related, right? But just the idea of what is the pathway we need to get on in order for whatever success that we're experiencing in the short term, how do we make that for the long term, for one season and then for multiple seasons in a row? And this is what the Dodgers have done. Pete, they've become a model franchise that is consistently not necessarily winning the championship, even though they've won back-to-back now, but competing at the highest level, making
that's
the playoffs
every season. That's all you can ask for as a fan, right? Yeah.
Exactly. No, and it's what the Lakers did for multiple generations of fans. I'll never forget the year that the Lakers drafted Eddie Jones in the lottery. It was like their first lottery pick that was their own.
Of our lifetime.
Forever. Sure, they had drafted James Worthy, number one overall. They had drafted Magic Johnson, number one overall, or whatever. They got those picks in crazy trades and coin flips. And it wasn't because they were just some loser franchise that was at the top of the draft. What happened in that stretch where after Kobe was injured and they had lottery pick after lottery pick, I would imagine the Lakers are trying to make it so that that's never happening again, or another generation of fans gets the same sort of stretch that we did, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is part of why I'm so excited about this, man, is that I don't know how it's going to manifest itself, but one of the barriers in the way of this happening before is that, you know, the profits of the Lakers were split between the Six Bus Kids and the other minority owners and things like that. But the several of the Bus Kids, that was either most or all of their income from a year-to-year basis. And so every dollar that was spent on, because everything that you're talking about there, D, at some point converts into money spent, right? You're going to have to invest in some way or another. That every dollar that was spent was taken out of their pockets from and that's true, of course, for this situation as well, but that's how these people were surviving in a lot of ways. And so I don't know what it's going to look like, D, but it's like, this is a huge, when people talk about, oh, the Lakers are going to modernize, or they're going to be like a real NBA, like all the stuff that kind of gets tossed around, part of it's got a little bit of stank on it from how people are about the Lakers, but part of it's very much true. And a big reason for that is that that was a barrier in the way.
I remember Dave Roberts talking about the Dodgers during the playoffs, right? And he was saying essentially like what our ownership group does is they turn the profits around and reinvest it into the team. And he was basically saying you would hope that's what every ownership group does, or that's what they should be doing, but ours actually doesn't. I look at franchise valuations the way that you look in many ways, like a piece of prime real estate. Currently, there's only 30 NBA franchises. One day soon, there may be 32 or 34 or 40. Who the hell knows, right? Down the line. My point is, though, is like there's not a million of these. The valuation of these things continues to go up and up and up. It's funny listening to Mark Cuban, who bought the Mavs for X and then sold them for Y. And it's multiples upon multiples of times over.
What LA Kings, I think, were part of that.
What the Lakers franchise was purchased for. Now they were valued at $10 billion.
Crazy.
And so I think what you want from an ownership group is for them to recognize that actually when I'm going to get my money back is when I sell. It's not because I'm going to realize year over year profits like it's some sort of stock that I'm holding. I'm very much interested in that exact idea, which is how can we continue to invest in the team to make them as strong as possible for as long as possible, year over year over year over year, because that sort of success breeds the sort of franchise valuation that Dr. Buss experienced. Market's going to play a part in that, and the Lakers are in Los Angeles, and I think the Clippers benefited from that as well. You're in Los Angeles, like you get sold for a lot of money. Like, I get it. That's a piece of the pie, but there's a difference. And there's a reason why the Lakers are going to be valued the way that they're valued. It's because they are a name brand, to steal like a Denzel Washington line from American Gangster, like Blue Magic. That's a name brand. Like the Los Angeles Lakers, that's a name brand. And that's going to remain true. And the way that you continue to build that is make them champions over and over and over again, the way that they have with the Dodgers, right?
That's how you have your cake and eat it too, right? That's how you make the money, is by being really good. We don't have a ton of insight either into what they did at the Dodgers or what they're going to do with the Lakers. I'm sort of searching for a Dodgers person that has insight into that. So this is my call to all of our listeners or anybody like that. If you know of somebody that that you think would be thoughtful on this, that could provide some insight, give us a suggestion. We'll try to get somebody on the pod that we can interrogate this a bit.
The proof is in the outcomes.
Sure.
And to me, there's no more stark a difference than what it was from what it looked like under the McCourts to what it's like under this group.
Ownership matters so much, D. It matters. It's so easy to take for granted. And growing up immersed in the Dr. Buss era, it's like we were so spoiled.
The Lakers have had success under Jeannie. Make no mistake. And I don't want to act as though like she's some tarnished, like, oh, like all she did was bad. That's not the case at all. The Lakers were very successful. I will say, though, that the difference in success, and the league changed during this time as well, but it's stark. The lows, every team, every franchise, every organization has highs and lows, but the lows that the Lakers reached during the transition of power, tenure to Jeannie are just much lower than the ones that her father experienced for that extended period. And I think the goal, or at least one of the goals should be, is to never experience those sorts of lows again. Will they be able to do it? Who knows? But that should be the goal.
Absolutely. Let's go to break here. Come back. Want to change gears and talk about Adu Thiro.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, We hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm so excited, man. He was one of those guys where, you know, he gets drafted in June and we don't see him at all. Summer league, nothing like that. And I've just been watching tape on him. And I remember, I will always remember this. I've been talking to Mike Garcia for 20 years now. The shit-eating grin on his face when we recorded the reaction pod. Like, yeah. It's one of the few times I've wished this was a video podcast. And even before that, like, and that's not really the type of guy he is either. And he was just like, so when I saw that, I was like, I gotta watch this kid. And then, like, the more I watched him, I was like, oh my God. And then now we get to see him in these G League games, D. And I'm texting you all of these, like, you see this layup, you see this dunk, and things like that. And so I would love to talk, is there a role for Adu on this year's team in the context of the last conversation that we had about sort of the lethargic nights and getting through the 82 and things like that? Like, I think he has potential role for beyond that. I don't want to get hopes up too high for this because there are Lakers have a lot of good players that are ahead of him in the pecking order. I don't want to raise some expectation that he's going to get minutes. However, he is the best perimeter athlete on the team by a country mile, and on a team that has some deficiencies in that respect, I don't think that completely putting him to the side and like, oh, he's just a second rounder, he's not going to or can't play or anything like that is the way to go. I think he's got some utility some utility at the very least on this team.
I believe he does too. I will say though, Pete, on a team where Jared Vanderbilt can't play anymore, like he can't even get minutes, then I think the pathway for Thero to actually getting on the court and playing a meaningful role feels like a very narrow path. Like, I honestly feel like he would need to show some things in the G League around ball handling and three-point accuracy and just like show a certain amount of like, this is applicable to things that we actually want at the pro level beyond all the athletic like prowess that he's showing, because I think that stuff translates automatically. Yeah. And I could see why you would not you, the royal you, mm-hmm. us, why we would want to see that sort of player get some action. It's an interesting idea though. I see it as a challenge within that same idea that you brought up of the Lakers have a lot of good players. Right now, Dalton's not playing. Right now, Vando's not playing. Even Kleba, who we raved about in our last pod, he's not playing. He only played because Ayton was unavailable and they still needed a big to play. Those things aren't mutually exclusive. What you're talking about is there a possibility or can we see this translating? And I think the answer to that is yes. The application of that yes, or getting to that yes, is there's a lot of hurdles within that. And so I don't have my hopes up around that at all, even though like I'm nodding my head yes a lot to when you're saying like, oh, I'd love to see X, Y, and Z, because I do think that sort of live wire body athleticism, just the sort of feel for how to leverage that athleticism as well, which is not something a lot of natural athletes have all of the time. It's something that I think if you just put it on the court, it's going to show some stuff to you. Yeah. But there's a lot of hurdles he has to clear in ways that I'm not even sure if those hurdles are going to be placed in front of him in that same way for him to even clear, if that makes sense.
It does. I think there will likely be a certain degree of injury and attrition over the course of the rest of the year where he'll get some chances and get some games and also that opportunity to shine at the G League level as well. But yes, I do think that athleticism is immediately translatable. You're talking about like the ball handling and the three-point shooting and all of that. I agree that those are components. I think the biggest thing that would keep him off of the court is sort of like defensive mistakes. With rookies, it's usually like you screwed up. It's not that you're not talented or don't have the physical capability. It's the understanding of your role within the broader scheme, your understanding of the personnel that you're guarding, things like that. And Adu is behind schedule from respect of not participating in training camp, not being ready for the start of the season and all of that, that he will have to play his way to earn it. So in some ways, this will sort itself out, that if he should be that, like, he's going to show it on the court.
It's interesting when you said that he's behind a little bit. The thing that I was thinking about when you mentioned that was Austin, and how Austin got his chance mostly because he shined in training camp in a way that turned around the idea that he was going to be on a two-way contract to getting converted to a standard contract. And he had shown enough to be like, okay, well, no, you're crossing the threshold from this to this other thing.
Right.
And once he then crossed that threshold, it was my understanding, he continued to do all of that stuff in practice. And then there were enough injuries and things that broke his way. That's just like he ended up making his way into the lineup. And when he did, he played well enough and did his thing. And all of those were opportunities that he actually seized on them very early in the process. And where we're at with Thero right now is that he didn't get a chance to show much of that stuff during the preseason or during training camp. He was the modified participant on so many of those days. And
just windmilling on a side court, you know, just casually throwing
just
down
casually
lefty
putting
jam,
his face at the rim and just like getting filmed, right? And having that stuff blasted out to social media. I also think, too, that one of the challenges that I want to reiterate, JJ's already sort of said, or it's been said, at least behind the scenes, it's like there's like a developmental year for him. And the threshold you have to clear, the bar you have to clear for someone's mind to change from what we, from the pre-established idea or understanding about what something is going to be, I'm always interested to see where that line is for each individual person. Now, I think that JJ could be convinced, but I think a lot of things would need to break in Thero's way, which aren't necessarily the best things for the Lakers, if that makes sense. It's like, if Rui and this guy and that guy are all hurt, or LeBron has to miss extended time, or anything like that, that might give him the pathway to do something. And then if he shows himself capable, it's then hard to like take it away. That's why I was talking about how the path is like a little narrow. And in some ways, the decision-making to get there may not even be like the circumstances we want the team to experience, if that makes sense. Like, so I would love for it to happen organically from all positives, right? Which was just like, oh, Thero's taken, I don't know, over the next four or five G League games that he's taken 15 or 16 threes and like, oh, how has Thero hit 50% of his threes through six G League games or something like that?
I don't care about that as much, man. That's not
I don't either. I'm talking about though the idea of like, oh wait, he can do this too, because the whole idea that you're talking about, our bar is at a certain level and he's already clearing it from the standpoint of what we value in these sorts of players. And I'm valuing a certain amount of like athleticism. I'll speak for myself. I'm valuing a certain amount of athleticism, feel for how to deploy that athleticism and just pop. And when someone pops on screen, I'm just like, I want to see that dude do it with other good players who allow him to play this specific way. And at the G League level, I think he can overwhelm guys. Just he's just going to do that. But at the NBA level, I want him playing with like LeBron or Austin or Luka or two or three of those guys at the same time and just being like, what's it look like when the ask becomes narrower?
Yeah, just go be yourself. That's my argument with him, D, is that I think that when you put him out with those incredible shot creators, he's already at it. Like, just do what you do right now. We will add to that over the course of time and years and all of that. But that ability to run the floor, he does pop. He does have that level of athletic ability and that motor as well, which is super important to do that. A question for you in this context, though. I would rather see Thero get a little bit of run before going back to Vando. Vando got a look at the beginning of the season, and for his reasons, and we discussed this a bit in a few pods ago, Redick decided he's going to be the guy that's out of it, that's out of that rotation. One, do you think that there is sort of a political problem if you go to Thero before you go back to Vando? And do you share that sort of, like, I've seen Vando. I know what Vando looks like with this team. Can we get a look at the Rook?
I think it's tricky for a variety of reasons. The politics stuff of veteran versus rookie, I think that's one piece of it. Vando making the amount of money that he makes and him potentially being like a trade option is also something that lingers with me as well. Like, would you want to go back to Vando first? Because if he pops for 3 or 4 or 5 games, that might rekindle interest that he might have from some team that you like. There's just there's so many variables at play there.
I think the same argument applies to Thero, in that if Thero goes out there and pops and he's a second round rookie making $2 million or whatever they make.
Yeah, less than
that. Becomes a trade, like from a trade perspective and sure. a trade asset perspective. He signed what, for 4 years? He signed for a 3-year deal on that. Like, the league knows who Vando is. They've seen him play plenty. I think sure. that if Thero played and people were like, man, look at this kid with the whole restructure, like, I want to keep him around. Don't get me wrong, but he's not untradeable or anything like that. And if you could add him as part of and to get that like higher level player, I think that giving him some minutes and showing the league, like, look at this kid, that there's some value in that, rather than if Vando goes, plays well for 3, 4, 5 games, like, I don't think that moves the needle as much as Thero doing the same thing.
I think that that's right, actually. And I know that I'm now going against what I said, but I do think that there's just a lot of factors at play with this stuff. And as much as I'd want it to happen, I don't want to say I'm understanding of why it doesn't, but it's just like we've watched enough to like know how these things go to a certain degree. But don't get me wrong, like, I'm going to continue to advocate for it the same way that you are.
No, I'm totally with you on that. I think he is a rare circumstance of a second round rookie who just does something very specific that the team itself is not good at, that it, like, a very, very rare. This guy, I do think, could help.
This is a thing where it's just like, I look at AJ Mitchell. He's in his second year, right? Mm-hmm. But look what he's doing for OKC. I forget his name right now, but the kid who's playing for Golden State right now, who is a rookie.
Richard?
Yes.
Will Richard?
Yeah. Yes. He's getting some minutes for them. He started a few games and he got moved to the bench again. But I do think there's a place, Pete, for like when, oh, this guy can do some things that I think are helpful. And I think that those things will continue to happen because the ask of him is like this specific thing. Thero fits that mold to a T. And I do think what he does helps the team. Let's go to break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to shift gears to the Clippers game.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Pete, we got news on Monday that DeAndre Ayton's already been ruled out for Tuesday's game against the Clippers with the knee contusion that kept him out of the second half of Sunday's win over the Jazz. And the Clippers are, we mentioned them the other day,
It's sort of our Schadenfreude list mm-hmm. of teams that we've enjoyed watching lose, and the Clippers continue to struggle. But not having Ayton, I think, is a big blow against the Clippers specifically. And I'm just wondering where your head is at around the Clippers matchup with Ayton being out and just sort of the team's general level of play, which is something we touched on Monday's pod.
Yeah, as much as I enjoy making fun of the LA ARP Clippers, they've played better these last couple of games. Harden had that 55 ball in their 10 a.m. game against the Hornets, and then Kawhi came back. But yeah, without DA, the first guy my head goes to is Kleba again. I thought he did a great job on Nurkic. There's a certain degree of opposing fives can just move Jackson around. You know what I mean? They could just body him and walk him under. Although that's gotten better this year. He's gotten stronger for sure. But that's a tough matchup for Jackson. The Nurkic types, the Valanciunases, just the big dudes that have a massive size advantage. And it's a little paradoxical because you don't look at Kleba as somebody who could match up with that from a strength to strength standpoint, but he is stronger than Jackson is. And then that's not the only way to defeat somebody with strength advantage over you. His positional defense, his understanding of angles and of box outs and things like that, focusing on Jackson since he will get bigger minutes most likely. This D is the starting lineup that we had post-Luka trade. And I do think that Jackson is a little more well-suited to fit the defensive scheme that the Lakers are running with the 1-5 switching a little bit more and all of that. So I'm curious your thoughts on the same question that you posed to me of contending with them without Zoo, guarding Harden on the pick and roll. They're going to pose some problems for us that despite them not being very good, I think that it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, and I'm also interested to see just the get-up nature of both teams in this matchup, right? Both teams do take this matchup fairly seriously. I used to root for Dallas, for example, when I was a football fan. And like those NFC East matchups, it's just like, oh, the Eagles are playing Dallas or the Giants are playing the Eagles or Washington's like all of those matchups were like blood feuds. And the Clippers and Lakers have had enough bad blood between each other that it's just like they get up for those games regardless. So the seriousness in which these teams play, these are areas where I think, okay, well, what's it going to look like? In bringing it back to Jackson, and this is where I think the Lakers were going to miss Ayton too, is that Ayton has exhibited a certain amount of like running as a five that I've very much appreciated. Jackson does that all of the time. Yeah. And it's one of the reasons why last year when the Lakers did go on their like second half of the season run, Jackson's athleticism was something that I thought was super important to the team's success. He didn't get a lot of credit for it, but he did that well. And even in games where Ayton has played well, when Jackson has come in, his vertical spacing and the amount of just like, no, I'm a downhill player and this is what I do for a living, which is way less nuanced than what Ayton does in terms of in the pocket and catching and spinning and all of that stuff. It's like, no, Jackson's he's a hammer. And, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail and he's going to try to do his thing over and over and over again. But there's a relentlessness that can come with that that I think is important and helpful. And so one of the things that I'm looking at is, all right, Zoo's going to have him beat in strength, but Jackson can run and run and run, and he can be a vertical threat. And if the Clippers decide, at least at first, we're not going to switch and we're going to play more conventional defensive coverages, I'm interested to see what it looks like with a Jackson Luka pick and roll and how Luka attacks Zoo. You know, he has it out for Zubats. He's had it out for him for years since the Clippers Mavs matchups. And so I'm intrigued by that aspect of things. The Kleba thing does intrigue me as well. If they do end up switching, we talked about this before with Kleba, but the archetype of a stretch big who can like pick and pop or even like ghost screen actions and just run into another spot of the court in order to try to confuse the defense, that's a helpful tool to have. And if the Clippers do play big, him potentially being a guy who you could play next to Jackson for a few minutes.
I think we might see that
or there. Mm-hmm. Right? Like just to help on the glass and be someone who is just big and physical in other ways. Even if it's like, no, you go defend Zoo and let, I don't know, Jackson defend Chris Dunn if he has to. Right? It's like stuff like that is interesting things that JJ can go to.
This is one of the few teams in the league that the Lakers are comparable to athletically. My biggest worry though is I have no idea how we're going to guard Harden. he's having a great year. He's been really carrying them. I know they're like, what, 5-11? It doesn't look good. But if you've been watching their games, he has been really the one thing that's... Clippers have been pretty stinky. But again, they played better these last two games, which is why, like, I don't know, I kind of got my radar up on this one. Lakers haven't been playing their best hoops. I also think there's going to be a certain amount of just growing pains with LeBron. Remember the first 15, 20 games of last year with LeBron? He was very obviously ramping himself up and not where he needed to be. That's going to take a while with him. That he's in basically training camp for himself right now. So just the last couple of topics there, D, wanted to throw on the table is, but specifically Harden, how the heck do we guard him?
Yeah, I think they're going to switch 1-4, what they've been doing before. I think Austin will start on him and they're going to do their best and have Austin play the way that Austin does, which I think is like positional defense and just try to stay in front. To me, the key with Harden, Pete, is as much about can you not fall for the tricks as is his step back going? And this is very much like with Luka as well. And so if Harden's making the step back, then he becomes very difficult to defend because he still has a lot of burst as a downhill driver. And he sets it up so well because his setup moves look the same for both his step back and for his drive. And it's what's made him such a brilliant player. He's a great passer as well. And he really is a very, very complete offensive player. And so I think they're going to try to corral him, but it's tricky. But if the step back's not going, then the rest of his game can deteriorate in ways where it's just like, oh, he can get you on drives and he can draw fouls, but it's just like he becomes just a way less efficient player. And so in some ways, it's about some of it is just make or miss league with him. The guy I would point to is like you mentioned Kawhi being back. I'm wondering, are Rui and LeBron up to it? I'm also interested, like, can LaRavia hang on possessions against Kawhi? Because the Lakers are a big team.
On the perimeter, yeah.
It's just like, but Kawhi, when he gets it going, that's another guy that's just like, oh, make or miss league. He's making contested jumpers over everyone. And so the quality of over-the-top shooting that the Clippers have offered over the years, I know that was a thing that you used to talk about a ton, like several years ago and maintained. It's just like, look at the over-the-top shooting of the Clippers going back to like Morris and guys like that, right? And so if the Lakers are able to deal with that, I think that they will position themselves well. The one idea that I would pose to you is, how do you think the Clippers deal with the Lakers attack defensively? They've got Zubats, they've got Lopez. When they go to their second unit, it's very difficult to switch. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what you think about like some of the bench groupings and like, is it going to be Austin driving a lot? And how does that look? And like how you think that part of the game plays out?
Yeah, with respect to that, I think that the bigger, slower footed bigs for other teams are a great matchup for the Lakers. I was pointing this out the other day that everybody's got sort of these more mobile bigs in the games that we've either lost or had some difficulty in, that I think it's tough when it's a Zoo and Lopez combo. They have shown more aggressively with Zoo, even to the point of switching a good amount on Luka, that he actually got some wins on that in the first game that they played with Luka as a Laker last season. Then they played again not too long after that, and then they started sending two and doing a little more of that, but they don't want to get into rotation. They've got older guys too, but they're also playing guys like Kobe Sanders and Cam Christie, Max's brother, these younger guys that do sort of add that component to it, but just their foot speed, man, I think they're going to have difficulty with us. And then before we wrap up on the Harden topic, when you talk about corralling him, I think what we'll see is a lot of like iced pick and rolls and strong side zone, just sort of an effort to like, we're going to funnel you toward the corner, drive to the baseline. We got a second guy waiting for you down there. We can't guard you one-on-one, but we also don't want to double you hard. So it's sort of like, go this way. We've got help waiting. And that's one of the things that Austin does well is like he executes the scheme well, meaning that if we're icing, he's not going to screw up that often and be like, oh, I forgot to ice right here type of thing.
The thing I will say, and the last point I'll make about this and this game in general, is that Harden is so good of a passer, Pete, that I do worry about
the
like showing him soft looks
yeah.
like that. Like, I'd much rather like pressure him and try to jump out on him a little bit and shock him a little bit more.
Jackson could do that a little bit more too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
JJ doesn't like to put two on the ball, so I don't see that as being a solution.
It won't be option one, but it might be, you know, if things don't work out.
They could go to it eventually. So I do expect them to ice pick and rolls. They've been doing that more, but Harden is such a creative passer that it's just like, even if you do that, Zoo in the pocket can lead to certain things, or Zoo lurking backside coming from the dunker spot while Jackson shows or Kleba shows, and then Harden's throwing passes over the top for lobs. Those are the sorts of things that start to concern me a little bit, because like I said, Harden, he is like Luka, he is like LeBron, he is a brilliant, I see this coming, I know all the reads, I've been defended like this for a long, long time, and I have all of the answers to the test too. Like, he's a former MVP, like he's going to the Hall of Fame for a reason. So you have to understand like what you're up against with him as well. And I don't necessarily want to have one of those nights where it's like, oh, Harden has 15 assists. It's just like, no.
Absolutely. It's going to be a tougher one than it may look on paper via record. Join me on Playback. We'll watch that together. Going to be that the first 8 p.m. Pacific time start of the season. Going to be a late one. Please check out the new LFR merch store on Cotton Bureau. And we will be back tomorrow to talk about how the game went. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, Freddy pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant, yeah! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.